The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
And let me be very clear. I grew up in segregated Birmingham, Alabama. I couldn't go to a movie theater or to a restaurant with my parents. I went to segregated schools till we moved to Denver. My parents never thought I was going to grow up in a world without prejudice, but they also told me that's somebody else's problem, not yours. You're going to overcome it, and you are going to be anything you want to be. And that's the message that I think we ought to be sending to kids. One of the worries that I have about the way that we're talking about race is that it either seems so big that somehow white people now have to feel guilty for everything that happened in the past. I don't think that's very productive. Or black people have to feel disempowered by race. I would like black kids to be completely empowered, to know that they are beautiful in their blackness. But in order to do that, I don't have to make white kids feel bad for being white.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Amen to that, huh? I love that. That was the former U.S. Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, on The View last week. She got a lot of applause for saying that. They were eloquent thoughts about CRT, about critical race theory, and what's going on in our schools and what's happening to our children. I thought that was a very rational view. A couple weeks ago, I don't know how clued into this particular issue you are. A couple weeks ago, the DOJ, the Department of Justice, they issued a memo, and they directed the FBI and U.S. attorneys to work with the federal, the state, the local, and the tribal and territorial leaders in each of the federal judicial districts to discuss these strategies of addressing threats against school administrators and boards and teachers and staff. We talked about this, I guess it was last week or even the week before. That came after that letter, remember, that President Biden released by the the letter that President Biden was released by the National School Board Association, and they were asking for federal help because they wanted to be protected against, you know, alleged interstate threats against school board members, and they called parents domestic terrorists. I mean, you remember all this. I mean, it did get resolved. It's come out just recently, though, and it's just a follow-up to that story that whole thing was a setup. The whole thing was a setup. The NSBA, they worked directly with the White House on developing the letter, and the Justice Department, they knew it was coming, which is why the letter and the memo are dated only a couple days apart. Well, there were some reports coming out that President Biden had gone ahead and appointed the president of the NSBA, Viola Garcia, to be on the board, which has oversight of the National Assessment of Educational Progress. And that group is charged with making sure that students are making the appropriate educational progress. Well, to me, it probably shows the amount of collusion that has been happening for a while. So this governmental backlash against parents exerting their rights over their children's education, getting a lot of help from the media as well. The Washington Post, they ran a column with a very blunt headline, and I'll just quote it for you. They said this, quote, "Parents claim they have the right to shape their kids' school curriculum. They don't," end of quote. And, of course, I'm sure you've heard what the Virginia gubernatorial candidate, Terry McAuliffe, claimed. It was the same thing. You know, he was in a debate, and he claimed, you know, that, you know, parents have no right to tell the schools what the curriculum for the kids should be. Yeah, was that taken out of context? I don't know. I don't think so. I tend to think that that's really what he believed, but the issue has been a big one in that campaign, and we see his numbers plummeting precipitously. What was once a significant lead has now become a nose-to-nose race, and it's come back to haunt his campaign. But all over the country, it's not just Virginia, all over the country, parents are getting fed up with how school boards have basically capitulated to the wider culture, and they're pushing back. In the very first hour of the program today, I had Dr. Teresa Collette on from the University of St. Thomas School of Law. And again, I said to her, they're having their own situation right now with kind of a woke ideology being pushed on the educators there. It's time for educators to stand up. It's time for parents to stand up. It's time to say enough is enough and push back on what we're seeing happening here in the culture. And the school boards, I said, they capitulated to the wider culture, and some are pushing back. They sometimes go too far. They make threats they shouldn't. Some parents do, you know, and again, I am not an advocate of violence by any means, never. But I do think a parent can question critical race theory. They can question what's being taught to their kids. They can question, you know, what they might see as indoctrination. I think a parent has a right to do that. Not just a right, they have a duty to do that for the sake of their kids. You know, after you find out what your kids are learning and you're frustrated, I understand a parent venting at these people who you entrust your children to. So as Election Day draws near, I think you're going to expect to find a lot more people showing up at the polls to vote for something that most people probably never voted for in the past. They didn't care about up until now. And that is the local school board. And we often talk about this. Every vote counts and every position counts. Those lower levels of government, you know, quite often those people get experience. They want to put their toe in the water in some other form of government. We need good, well-formed people at all those levels. So we'll see what unfolds. Right now, I'm joined by Noelle Merring. She's a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center and also the editor for TheologyOfHome.com. And she's been with us in the past. She wrote a book called Awake, Not Woke. If you haven't read it, it's well worth the read. It's a Christian response to the cult of progressive ideology, and Tan Books is the one who's publishing that, so you can check it out there. She joins me today for some conversation. Of course, you're welcome to join us too. Feel free to dial in, share your experiences, vent your frustration. You can join me, 888-914-9149. Noelle, good afternoon. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Drew. Great to be back with you.
Always a delight. I appreciate your work. Loved the book. Let's talk about what's happening here with school boards. You know, we're into the school year now. How far ranging is the blowback against school boards right now? What are we seeing, and where are parents in all this?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it certainly seems like a big story and one that's happening and taking root all over the country. And I think for good reason. There's been a real escalation on multiple fronts in advancing the woke movement. And I think that part of that is why people are waking up to what's happening. But also it's a sign, I think, their panic, that they have operated for years on a sort of fostering confusion where they seem on the side of the angels. And I think more and more they're showing their hand, for example, with the comments that you outlined about Terry McAuliffe saying that parents cannot, you know, be in charge or inform them on what the shape of the education. And parents are seeing this more and more, not just in regards to teaching history, as they'll say sometimes, CRT is just teaching history. I think they're increasingly realizing that they're actually rewiring kids' brains to see that everything in life, that evil in life, is embedded in structures that precede them and that implicate or exonerate them. And the thing that's wrong with that is that it takes away the agency of the kids. It disempowers everyone who it touches. It disempowers the people ostensibly on the side of whom they want to help, people of racial minorities, for example, by telling them that their lives are not within their control to change. Their circumstances are utterly outside of their control to change. And that's a really helpless ideology of despair.
Yeah, that's a really good point. My guest today, Noelle Merring, if you want to join us, I'll get to the phones in a second here, 888-914-9149. I'm assuming this is not a new phenomena, that this has probably gone on for a while, yet it seems to really be coming to the fore right now. Has there been a slow creep? Are we seeing a slow evolution in this? Has this been going on for decades? I'm assuming it has been. But, you know, when the school board elections came up for all this time, people just ignored that section and they checked off, you know, names at random. They didn't know who they were. They didn't do their due diligence. What's the history behind this, and how important is it to really know who's on these school boards and vote appropriately?
Yeah, no, it's been a long, slow burn. And, you know, the history, I think, I go into the book, is really a combination of sort of a neo-Marxism combined with neo-Freudianism and then a postmodernism. That's a lot of words. But I think that the thing to realize is that it's, you know, it happened sort of like that old Mark Twain quote about bankruptcy, slowly and then all at once. You know, it's almost like this spiral, and then it starts picking up speed. And I think that one important thing to realize is that it's all oriented towards destabilizing society, separating parents from kids, destabilizing us from our own sense of self. And that's been happening for a long time, particularly, for example, with teaching this, you know, the sexual revolution, how much that's been culturally fostered, and also in school systems with the abandonment of sort of a traditional morality or natural law. But it's escalated now with the transgender movement, whereas what once was sort of something people thought they could sweep under the rug, now it's the absurdity is laid bare. And I think parents are seeing that. And they're saying, you know, teachers having their pronouns and teaching this radical gender ideology to our kids is so absurd and so on its face a lie that we no longer can ignore it. And it's also exposing a whole host of other lies, you know, that there was always a sense that our bodies mean something and that bodies have to mean something. We have, you know, and not just in transgender ideology, but also just in morality. And I think parents are seeing the obvious errors and then working backwards to the more subtle errors and wanting to reject it altogether. And it's not just conservative and religious parents. It's some liberal parents. It's wealthy parents. It's poor parents. It's parents across the board are rejecting this because they have their children's interests at heart and are realizing that the school does not.
Yeah, that's so true. It's such a shame, though, too. I mean, it's such a shame. The kids are so malleable at this particular point in time, you know, and it's so important to educate them properly. You know, as a parent, I'm glad that my children are out of grade school and high school and now out of college, actually. But I thought, gosh, if I was sending my kids to school right now and I heard, you know, they had to deal with these gender issues and all the critical race theory and all the other things that are coming down the pike right now that they're being exposed to, what would I do? What are things that parents today are really concerned about? Is it masks? I don't know if that's at the top of the list. Is critical race theory? Is it gender? What is it? What are the big issues that really are pushing parents to say enough is enough? Or is it all of them?
I think it's all of them combined. Fundamentally, all of those things you just mentioned are so fundamentally dehumanizing. It's reducing human beings to be, you know, it's making us anonymous to one another, destabilizing friendships where you start to look at with suspicion upon each other. It's eroding the parent and child trust as well as the institutional trust in the community. So this is and this is what woke ideology does. It cannot build. It cannot create. It can only rupture and it can only tear things apart. And that's what it fundamentally is, a rejection of. It's a rejection of all that is. That's what critical theory is. Let's reject all that is until we can tear it down. And that's a deeply destabilizing way to move throughout the world. And I think parents are seeing that, and they're rightly angered. And they're trying to be, they know that they're being intimidated into silence by being insulted or by being portrayed as a threat. But that's, you know, that's the real threat is the one who is actually making that accusation. It's the people, the powers that be that are recognizing or seeing parents as like antagonists rather than partners in education.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, we'll go to the phones in a second. 888-914-9149, you can get in. Here, let me share with you an email that I received, too. I got this yesterday. I was talking about another issue. And Bill, thank you for writing. He's listening in Maine. I won't read the end of his email because he got a little foul-mouthed in it, but I'll start off in the very beginning. He says, I had a good laugh listening to your first half hour of your show today. How many years have you taught school? Have you served on a local school board? My wife has taught elementary school for 46 years. Her students have no idea about any of the crap that you are saying that's being promoted in schools. She's having a hard enough time just getting her students to be good readers, to understand math, and most importantly, to learn how to respect one another and to work as a team. Your comments about parents taking control of what's being taught was particularly stupid, considering that most of the 28 students in my wife's classroom are being raised in foster homes by grandma or her boyfriend because their parents are in jail and drug rehab or just plain absent on the scene. I'm sure you enthusiastically endorse those parents, actively participate in what's being taught to the children. My point yesterday, Noel, was this. I was saying, hey, look, as parents, we are the primary educators of our children. And we do have a responsibility to make sure that we know what is being taught to them. If we don't like what's being taught, we have to do our due diligence and be able to instill in the proper values and education in our kids. That means doing it ourselves or taking them to another place or challenging the institution they're being taught out. That's what we've got to do. Apparently, this listener was not totally happy. He says, as John Stewart recently pointed out, news media is about conflict and laziness. Your program is a classic example. As a fellow Catholic who works full-time at a Catholic organization serving the poor and the most vulnerable amongst us, I'm disappointed that you and your fellow broadcaster, like Patrick Madrid, seek to be part of the problem instead of part of the solution, blah, blah, blah. And he goes on. I love your thought on that. I mean, there is a certain point that he does bring up. You know, we think that most kids come from a stable two-parent family. They do come from broken families. They do come from the grandmother. They do come from foster homes. How does that factor in your thoughts on this man's point and the case that he's trying to make regarding the conversation?
Yeah, well, he said a lot. I mean, I think it would be rather, you know, certainly it is true that there are good teachers who are well-intentioned and trying their darndest to educate children at their schools. That is absolutely true. That this is not, you know, we don't want to make overly broad sweeping statements. But it's a bit myopic to think that this trend of parents going to the school boards and what's happening in the education system and the remarks in the NSBA letter memorandum, that all of these things are happening in a vacuum, or that they don't actually signify something that's fundamentally escalating and shifting in the school system. So while you don't want to implicate every single person who's in the schools, and perhaps his wife is lovely and trying and working incredibly hard, that does not indicate anything about the overall trend of what's happening and the importance of parents resisting it. You know, I don't think that most parents would just out of their own, you know, desire, fight school boards for no reason. They're really pinpointing something that's actually happening, real books that are in the school libraries, real literature that is being pushed on their kids, and real exercises in DEI that are fundamentally divisive and motivated by despair. So, you know, and I think he points a good point about broken families. Education certainly needs to be in partnership with whole, healthy, functioning families. But that's a bit of the irony, right, is that the woke movement has spent decades trying to destroy the good of the family. Smash the patriarchy, you know, sexual revolution. This has been the cultural revolution of progressivism happening for decades. And then they point to those fundamental wounds that happen as a result of this ideology as further evidence for power pushed back onto the school system and away from parents. Well, the restoration of the family is the remedy. The restoration of society is not just a further, you know, double down on a fruitlessness or a hopelessness for family life. And so, you know, the ideology is going to fundamentally have to be rejected if we're going to find a way out of this.
You're right. All right, let's take a few calls. 888-914-9149. Feel free to pull up a chair. Tom's listening in Chicago. Tom, good afternoon.
Well, hello, everybody. I buy a magazine. It's called Signs of the Times, or Signs and Wonders. It's an apostolate, and I've been getting there for many years, and it's the Blessed Mother leaves messages in there to visionaries, and Jesus too sometimes. And the Blessed Mother left a visionary in there. I think his name might have been Pedro Regis, or it might have been Maria Esperanza, one of the visionaries. And they said in there, the Blessed Mother told them, this is now 2-3 years ago now, before all this was going on, she said that soon God will be back in the schools. It's a Signs of the Times apostolate, or Signs and Wonders magazine. I can give you the number off the air if you wanted me to.
Yeah, no, I'm very familiar with the organization. Thank you, Tom, very much for that. Yeah, you know, maybe we should go back. You know, Madeline O'Hare was the one responsible, Noel, for the removal of God and prayer from our schools. And after that, we did see a decline. I hope that whatever visionary claim that God will be back in the schools is legitimate and on the money, because that would be great news if that prophecy was true. But let's talk about what happened. How did we get to this point? And you know, in terms of schools themselves, I was talking a little bit earlier about the University of St. Thomas, Catholic institutions even now being indoctrinated with some wokeness, you know, or at least they're being threatened with that particular ideology, their staff is. But maybe give us a little history. How did we get to where we are right now?
Yeah, well, the school system was one of the primary institutions that were identified by, for example, the engineers of the Frankfurt School, which was basically a group of Marxists who came to spread revolution in the West. And they really understood that school systems were a key avenue to seeding revolution in America in particular. That there's very little that families can hold a candle to in 1 hour, for example, of Bible study or Sunday school versus, you know, 5 or 6 hours a day for 5 days a week that the school system had. And so they did a really effective job of radicalizing a lot of influential people who then went on to become very influential people in, for example, teachers' colleges throughout America that then trained people to go out into their communities and spread this ideology. So it's been a long, quiet kind of underground cultural revolution that's been quite effective. I don't think it has the last word, but it has been. They've taken the long game in this and spreading this sort of ideology, and it's increased and it's gotten more radical as time has gone on. But it's been seeded for a long time.
And now there is a real attempt, I think, at a power grab going on in Washington and other places, with parents being told, you know, you can't direct your children's education. What kind of response do you think that's going to bring, both in the elections and just personally? I mean, we saw when parents said, hey, enough is enough, an apology was ultimately issued. But to me, this says this comes down to power, wanting to control and form the next generation, determining what you're going to indoctrinate them with. And they're their future voters. And I see a political tentacle in the mix here as well. But I'd love your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's absolutely right. And that's one of the kind of, you know, the flattening aspects of ideology, that everything becomes political. You know, your sexuality is political. Education is political. You know, your personal life is political. That's part of the way the ideology spreads itself and corrupts and reduces us. But I think it's going to take on, you know, it is about power, and politics is the way in which they're going to try to enforce it. And I think that's the thing with ideology, is that it doesn't spring from our nature. It's not common sense to us. And so it really has to ultimately be forced upon us, thrust upon us, and coerced and silenced of opposition and all the things that we're seeing. But I think parents, you know, we have more power than I think we realize. And really banding together and resisting this will be far more effective than we might think. Because if 10 people resist something, then they can be dismissed as sort of on the fringe, you know. But if, like, you have 60% of people in this one particular community resisting and standing up, then that's powerful. That's, you can't dismiss that. So I think the more that type occurs, it's courageous, and it'll build the movement.
That's so true. Well, let me do this. I take a short break. When we come back, I'll take calls. I only have Noelle Maring for a short time today. She is the author of a book called Awake, Not Woke, A Christian Response to the Cult of Progressive Ideology. You can get that at TANS. Maybe you're a school teacher. If you are a school teacher and you're seeing this, love to hear your experiences. Maybe you're a parent and you want to share what your kids are being exposed to, feel free to dial in. As I said, we'll talk. I only have it for a few moments today. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Again, Awake, Not Woke, available at TAN Publications, or just do a search for it, or maybe check out theologyofthehome.com. That's her website as well. I'll be back with more right after this. Stay with me.
Live, coast to coast, the Drew Mariani Show is on Relevant Radio.
Hey, today we'd like to thank Carlos, who's listening in Texas, for donating his Nissan. And you can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles by visiting relevantradio.com/car. Well, thanks for being here today. Great to be with you. Such a delight to give you a look at life. Hopefully you're not going to find anywhere else. We're taking a look at everything from critical race and gender theory, curricula, to abortion access, to teens, to really parental rights, and so much more. These battles are mounting nationwide. Parents are realizing that something is deeply wrong. I think you might... Maybe you see it with your own kids' education or your grandkids. And even if they don't understand the meaning behind it, some of this stuff can get kind of ideological. And sometimes you're not quite sure, you know, where you need to stand. But you do know, you get this sense. I think we're wired to kind of know what's in our child's best interest. And, of course, you know, this is just ratcheting up. It's becoming more and more evident. And I decided to bring Noelle Maring on the program today just to look at where we are and why the temperature seems to be rising. She wrote a book called Awake, Not Woke, A Christian Response to the Cult of Progressive Ideology. And we have to, as parents, really, we have to do our due diligence. We need to protect our children. And if you are iffy on the issue, then you need to inform yourself. You need to do your due diligence. Make sure you know what your kid is being taught and what to teach them, to make sure that they are well-formed so that they don't succumb to the traps of this radical progressive ideology that is out there. And Noelle, it's good to have you back. Let's jump into the phones. We'll take a few calls, okay? Mark is listening in San Jose, California. He wants to join the conversation and talk with you. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, hi, Drew. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I never call in, but I thought I would. I have two kids in a local Catholic high school in San Jose. And, you know, I think some of this critical race theory is creeping into our schools, Catholic schools, no less, right? When I talk to the school leadership about it, they'll tell me, hey, we've never heard of critical race theory. That seems a bit unlikely. They teach kind of the, the equity, inclusion, and diversity mantra that just seems to be a drumbeat, right? And they even sort of promote the idea of Black Lives Matter, and I called them out on it, and they're like, well, we don't really support the organization, but yet now I see that they have sort of a donate button to BLM organization. So it feels like, my wife and I were Catholics. We send our kids to a Catholic school because we want them to be raised Catholic, and we don't want it to be substituted, that teaching substituted with basically a, a woke sort of cultural version of Catholicism, right? And they're trying to sort of conflate ideas, right? Well, we should love each other and be, accept diversity and accept all kinds of things, but it's not, to us, my wife and I, it doesn't feel very good, and we feel like we're being deceived, basically.
Yeah, I think you're right to feel that, Mark. That's the sad thing, is that even in Catholic schools, sometimes the stuff is creeping in, and so parents can't even be complacent if the school's Christian or Catholic, necessarily. I worked with some parents at a school called Loyola Academy outside of Chicago, and they started a website called kidswinloyola.org, and they compiled a lot of resources to really help with church teaching, the distinctions between critical race theory and the Catholic understanding of justice, Catholic social doctrine. I just would start really trying to understand what's going on, because that sort of clarity will give you a lot of confidence to combat this as much as you can. Also, I would, of course, commend my book to you.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been very respectful, and we've had conference calls with them, to push back on this. And I'm not sure if you have any advice as to how we, as parents, in a respectful way, can push back a bit more forcefully, right? Because I don't really see any changes happening. It's kind of like nodding, like, they'll hear us, but I don't see any changes made, really, right? So I feel like we're fighting kind of a momentum here, and it doesn't feel that comfortable. So
I would not give up. I wouldn't give up if I were you. And it's one effective tactic is to just show them actual statements that the movement makes, such as being on time is a white virtue, hard work is a white virtue, politeness is whiteness. They're incredibly racist statements that this movement is making. And I think the more we highlight the sort of absurdity, the more effective that will be.
Yeah. You don't fight racism by being racist, right? And you don't solve racism by telling my kids who, happen to be white that, they should carry the burden of racism of the past, right? So I just don't think it's the right approach. It's a very divisive approach, I feel.
Right. Hey, Mark, thanks. Yeah. Good luck. Good luck in the battle. Thank you for calling in and for sharing. And you're not alone. And that's what I love, Noel. I mean, Mark called. He's one of many voices, I think, across the country where we're seeing this. And I think parents should be outraged. They should be concerned because, what we're seeing being taught, it's not education. It crosses the line. I mean, we, as a nation, when it comes to basic academic subjects like math and reading, we are well below proficiency level compared to other nations. I mean, we're lagging behind in that. Right now, a low number of students are achieving competency in those basic subjects, 23% in math, 39% in reading. And I heard one person make a case, this should be a priority. It's not education, it's indoctrination, what they're being taught. And for some reason, school board, they've circled the wagons and they don't care what parents think. Let me go to the next call. Phil is in Glenview, Illinois. He wants to join the conversation as well. Glenn, Phil, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew and Ms. Mehring. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Mehring, for your book, Awake Not Woke. I read it recently and I found it superb. I'm calling because for the last 3 years since I retired from the U.S. State Department, as a Foreign Service officer and came home to Illinois from overseas, I've been a substitute teacher. And I thought a year ago that I wanted to try to get my professional educator license and a Master of Arts in teaching because I felt a calling to be a teacher. But I had to leave the program I was in because I was required, one of the classes required to graduate was called Social Justice Perspectives on Education. Hmm. And it was absolutely the wokest, like nightmare wokeism. And the professor said right up front, in order to be successful in this class, namely pass this class, you have to embrace the role of an educator as an activist and so forth. And I said, I'm not going to be an activist. I want to be a teacher, not an activist. Well, I got into a big argument and so forth. I ended up withdrawing from the program. But it makes me think that, you know, it's very hard to become a teacher these days if you don't toe the woke line. And I find that very sad. And I wonder what I can do now. I seem that the door to become an educator seems to be closed to me now.
Thank you, Phil. Thanks so much, first of all, for your service. But I think you're absolutely right that they have become the gatekeepers of who's going to have the ability to educate kids now. And I would encourage you, because it sounds like you probably have a lot of talent and ability and true passion for this. And I would encourage you to find something outside of the public school system, because I think increasingly parents are going to turn to homeschooling, co-ops, these sorts of kind of community-led formation and education in ways that you might be able to find yourself really useful, especially as we move forward and into a new structure, because this one is not sustainable. So I would not despair of your potential to really help in this way.
But no, let me interject for a second here, just to Phil's point. I mean, I hate to abandon the base or the camp where all this education is taking place. Not everyone's going to homeschool. I mean, what can Phil do? What can others do to take back what has been taken from them? I mean, this, you know, yeah, this woke ideology is in there. We need to somehow keep the door open for men who are as competent as Phil to come in and to teach these, you know, the next generation. It's a loss not to have him be able to fulfill that duty.
It's absolutely a loss. And there are good schools in the country. I mean, I know it's not easy to just pick up and move somewhere, but, you know, if you're staying where you are and you want to stay within the system, then that's what parents are doing in this galvanizing together, banding right. together and resisting. And that's going to take a fight, you know? And so, I mean, if that's the road you want to go down, I would just start finding like-minded people, figuring out who in your community is resisting this and what more, how you can help that effort. Because it's going to be on the community level in large part, and I just don't know what's happening in your particular community or at that, you know, in your training to be a teacher, if there's a resistance. And sometimes there's people who just don't want to admit it. There are students who are saying, I just keep my head down and I keep quiet and I don't like this stuff, but I just want to get my credential. You know, there's probably a significant number of students who are feeling like that, feeling like you, but just don't know how to articulate it. And how to get those people a voice. You know, I think that's going to be key, whether it's writing to a local newspaper or, you know, what have you. But allowing people the freedom to start vocalizing that sort of dissent is how we'll build resistance. And if there's any hope to change the systems and the schools, then I think it's going to have to be through that sort of effort.
Yeah. All right, Phil, I hope that helps.
Thanks, Drew and Ms. Maring. Helped a lot.
And thank you. Keep up the good fight. We need you, Phil. We do. All right.
I'm disappointed
when I, you know, when I hear about individuals who can't, you know, use the gifts and the talents that God has given them, you know, in such a powerful way, such an important way. My guest today is Noelle Maring, and we're talking about a lot of different things, but I do want to get you plugged into her book. As you heard the last caller there from Glenview point out, he read her book. And this, if you're concerned about the educational system or where your kids are going or what the school board is doing, I think this is a good read. It's called Awake, Not Woke, published by TAM. But Noelle, I'm assuming we can get it anywhere. Going to the publisher is always a good idea. But your book could not, the timing could not be better in light of all that we're seeing happening right now. Let me go back to the phones. We'll grab a few more calls from around the country. 888-914-9149. Charles is listening in Orange County, California, and he wants to talk with you as well. Noelle, hi, Charles. Good afternoon.
Hello. Good afternoon to both of you, and thank you so much for covering this subject. It's really very, very important, and it's more dire than people realize. I'll give you a brief background. I've called you prior to, sir. My family immigrated. They're Imperial Russians. We have nobility. And what the communists had done in Russia was horrendous and murdered two-thirds of our family. But I'm calling in regard to this subject, and I have to stress so importantly, this is exactly what happened in Russia, especially in the early stages of communism. They did this to brainwash the children, so the children would go against the parents, and the children would report to the secret police what their parents were teaching. Also inclusive was if there was a secret liturgy being held somewhere, the children would tell the parent. I mean, not the parents, they'd tell the secret police. I'm going to tell you in addition, my babushka and great babushka told me that when the communists would come into a classroom in the Orthodox schools, they would shoot the nun right in the head, tell her to remove the cross, and she would not. And they killed nuns this way, and they cut the hands off priests so they cannot do the divine liturgy. This is a nefarious program happening in this country, and this is verbatim what happened in Russia. And my grandparents and great-grandparents taught me to fight this, excuse me, and that's why I'm calling. And I also heard the gentleman calling where he had children in high school, and he wasn't getting very far with the school in regard to woke nonsense. Let's just call it what it is. It's communist brainwashing. But nonetheless, he needs to team up with additional parents who feel the same way he does, and if they get nowhere with the school, they go directly to the bishop and let the bishop know what's going on.
All right, Charles, let me hold you on that point. You made a lot of them, and I'm grateful for your call. Love your passion. Love to hear your story one day. Noah, let's pick it up on that. I mean, there has been some discussion that what we're seeing unfold in our educational system here is out of the communist playbook, not just from Charles. Others have made that case, too. We're seeing what's happening. Actually, if you go to Russia today, I mean, this type of stuff is not being taught in their classrooms. But I'd like your take. What do we see in terms of big government now getting involved in what is being taught and what is being mandated?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that communism is not just another political movement. It is one of the most effective ways for the diabolical to corrupt the world.
Amen.
It is so anti-human and anti the human person. There's a reason why, you know, John Paul II and Solzhenitsyn came away from, you know, living under these sorts of regimes and sort of tyranny, emphasizing the dignity of the human person, the importance of the embodied human person, the importance of living in truth, not by lies, and most importantly, the importance of being reverent, of reverencing God. And I think we have to keep that in the forefront of our minds, that this is really a spiritual battle, far more than it is a political battle. And that can encourage us to link arms with people who, you know, we might not always agree with politically, but are seeing the same thing that we're seeing, and to band together with them, because this really has its roots in something that is deeply corrosive. And, you know, first and foremost, we have to arm ourselves spiritually in the fight against it.
Yeah. Hey, Charles, thanks for your call. We'll move along. Joe is in Chicago. I believe he's an adjunct professor at a college there. Hi, Joe. Thanks for dialing in.
Hey, Drew, how are you? Yeah, adjunct professor in the Chicago area at a college, and we received an email, and actually it was an inadvertent email from an administrator who was working on a program and asking how scores for African Americans and people of color could be increased. And when I brought this to someone's attention, they said, oh, we weren't supposed to receive that. Just delete the email. And then when I went back into the deleted, they were gone. So this is a very scary thing. It's no longer, Drew, about equal opportunity. It's about equality of outcome. And it's really scary. And not only in the public arena, but, you know, we send our kids to Catholic school here in Chicago. And quite frankly, I'm worried about the Archdiocese in Chicago with the bishop we have here. He has some liberal leanings, and it's a bit scary. So, yeah, that's out there in the college. I can speak to that because I received the email, and that's what's happening, America, and it is crazy.
Yeah,
it's terrible, Joe. First of all, I'm grateful for your call. And Noah, I want your take on this, too. There's an old saying about cheating, right? Cheaters never prosper. Well, we're robbing anyone of color of their future by fudging their grades. I mean, what does that do? There's no equity. There's no equality in that. In fact, you know, in some institutions, they call it passing the trash. When one student doesn't do well or meet the grades to pass from one class to another, teachers will pass that person along. We need to make sure they're educated. We need to give them all the arrows in their quiver that they need to advance in life. And by looking at somebody, the pigment of somebody's skin, and determining whether or not their grades should be elevated, that to me is, that's racist. I mean, it's ridiculous. But I love your thoughts for Joe.
It is absolutely racist. Thanks for your call, Joe. And I think that we have to remember that that principle of equality of outcome has been used to justify the most horrific atrocities throughout the last couple of hundred years. I mean, it has to be a principle that is imposed externally through force and through coercion and through the eradication of any sort of agency and standard. So, I mean, it's what we see when we hear a woke math teacher saying 2 + 2 might equal 5. That's the one's lived experience. The idea is that there is no objectivity anymore, that whatever serves the ideology is what is, that's the truth is a function of the ideology. And the ultimate goal is to say your failures are not yours to own, your successes are not yours to claim, that there is nothing, that everything is to be attributed to the systems, and there's no agency that you have. You're fundamentally not free, nor can you succeed in life throughout and transcend your circumstances. It's completely helpless and hopeless.
Yeah, that's so true. My guest, Noel Merrick. Noel, I got to hold it right there for just a second. Let me take a short pause. We come back for the final segment of our conversation today. If you want to join us, the number is 888-914-9149. We'll take a few more of your calls as we're taking a look at what's happening with school boards, with woke ideology, and all the challenges that face your kids today. The conversation will continue right after this. Stay with me. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester. Hey, thanks for joining me. If you are just getting plugged in, we're taking a look at everything from critical race and gender theory curricula to, well, all that our kids are being indoctrinated with, curricula promoting abortion, and it raises questions about the role of parents, parental rights, school boards, the government, so much more. You can get in. Love to hear your experience and your own encounters. You can dial in anytime, 888-914-9149. And Noel, I only have a few moments left with you today. In terms of where we are heading right now, do you think we're seeing how this is playing out in Virginia? I mean, education is a big thing with parents, and it looks like the governor there, who's trying to become reelected, is he's slipping in the polls because the gentleman who's running against him is really playing this education role. You know, the McAuliffe, who is the current governor, made a statement during one of the debates that parents don't have a right to tell schools what they're going to teach their kids. And whether or not he meant it that way or didn't, it didn't resonate well with parents, who are the primary educators of their kids. And, you know, this is something that really seems to be playing out now in the political scene. Your thoughts on what we're going to see in the days ahead? How big of an issue is this? You know, during the pandemic, a lot of parents, for the first time in their life, really, I think, discovered what their kids were being taught. Kids were locked down. The parents were there. The Zoom meeting was underway, and they saw the activism and the education that their kids were getting, and they began to issue grievances, and parents started to get involved, and a lot of parents are taking their kids from school altogether and decided to educate them. But I love your take on that right now. How's this playing out on the national scene? Is this just the tip of the iceberg, or will this fade into to a memory once life gets back to normal again?
Well, I think the election in Virginia is really telling, right? Because Glenn Youngkin, once he started speaking strongly out against all of this woke stuff in schools, he started really gaining a lot more traction. And I think that's a sign to all of our political leaders that you can no longer remain on the sidelines or sort of baby step around this, that this is actually something that is taking on a real power in the imaginations of parents and their experience of seeing their children threatened. And parents really step up when they see that their children are not being formed, but rather deformed in this sort of ideology. So I think we can hope that we'll have some leaders who will be more emboldened to speak plainly and clearly and to really lead the way, because yeah. parents are looking for leaders here, people who Amen. Can galvanize us on a national level and statewide level. But I think the milquetoast yeah. sort of quasi-leadership is no longer sufficient when we see what the stakes are here.
Yeah, you know, God brings good out of everything. And that pandemic was terrible, right? But I think a lot of parents for the first time realized, wow, this is what my kids are being taught. You really trust your children to their educators in some respects. And I think that was perhaps a good that came from it. Meg is listening in Minnesota. She's got 8 kids. Meg, thanks for joining us. Good afternoon.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. A good conversation. I just wanted to encourage parents, especially parents with kids going through high school and when you start looking at colleges, because our oldest too, we sent to Catholic schools that, you know, were really Catholic in name only. And now our oldest son, who's in his 30s, is teaching math, and he's talking about the whole racial equity in math and talking about social justice. And we just don't see eye to eye, and he's no longer Catholic. And so now our successive kids, we've picked schools a little more wisely, but I would really encourage parents to know the colleges where they're sending their kids and make sure that they're truly teaching Catholicism, because it's been very frustrating for us. Yeah.
My heart goes out to you. I'll pray for your family tonight. Let's pray for each other's families as well, especially for our kids, you know, so many are drifting away from the faith, so many being indoctrinated by what's being taught. And Noah, I want to give you final thoughts here because I have a few moments left. You heard Meg's comment. What can we do? And just some final thoughts on the issue as we wrap this up.
My heart goes out to Meg, and God bless her for being a mother of 8. What a sacrifice. And I would not lose hope about your son, obviously. I'm sure you don't, and you're praying for him. But I do think this is the thing that we have to be aware of, because I hear this all the time. I send my kids off to a certain school. I thought it was good. They came back woke. Now they left the faith. And I think it's because the woke movement really operates on Christian precepts, such as walking with the oppressed, walking with the suffering, being compassionate, not judging the hearts of another. But it takes those good precepts and it alters them in small but then striking ways until it is finally lived off of the Christianity in your heart and until it replaces it. Because they cannot coexist. The wokeness cannot coexist with the faith, as Christ is really the target of this movement. So I think the more we can just have that clarity and inform our kids, you know, deeply, and also be, as Meg said, aware of where we're sending them to school, that's going to make a big difference.
Well, Noel, thank you for so much time today. Thanks for your book, too. Noel Merring is a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, editor of TheologyOfHome.com, and her book is called Awake, Not Woke, A Christian Response to the Cult of Progressive Ideology, available from Dan. Hey, we'll catch up again soon. Thanks for all you do. Stay on top of it for us, okay?
Thanks. Great to be with you. Thanks, Diane.
All right. God bless you. Noel Merring. I only have a moment or two left, and my gratitude to everyone who's on hold, but I do want to make you aware of something I think is really important as we approach next week. Next week, of course, we have got All Souls Day and All Saints Day. But there's something relevant to doing, I just think, is extraordinary. And I want to talk to you about this frequently, and I know I've probably mentioned it to you a few times, and you might not have heard it. Monday begins the month of the Holy Souls, and in remembrance of your loved ones who have died, who have gone before you, Relevant Radio wants you to send us their names, and we just want to pray for them. Okay, we're going to be praying a novena for anybody that in your family, anybody that you worked with, anybody that you knew. Simply, you can make a list of the names on the website, and then those names are going to be remembered starting on Tuesday, November 2nd, all the way to the following Wednesday, November 10th. They're going to do a 9-day novena for any soul who's been passed away and that you want us to remember. So go to relevantradio.com/souls. It's relevantradio.com/souls. And give us their names. They'll be remembered every day. And there's nothing more efficacious or more powerful, nothing better for a purgatorial soul than the daily Mass. And that's noon Central Time. All right. It replays again 7:30 Central Time. I pray the chaplet every afternoon at 3 Central, 4 Eastern, you know, 1 Pacific. You can do the math. And then Father Rocky will lead the rosary at 7 p.m. Central. And so you're getting the Mass. You're getting the chaplet of Divine Mercy, which the Lord said was a prayer for the sick and the dying. And you get that powerful prayer of the Most Holy Rosary, which has been given so many promises and graces. And these are all going to be offered for your loved ones here at Relevant Radio. It's a win-win, and it's free. You know, I often go to church, and I'll have Masses said for souls, right? Somebody in my family, somebody who I know passed away. And it costs money. A lot of times you pay a church stipend for the Mass, right? This is absolutely free. It's zero. Cost you nothing. We want to pray for you. The souls in purgatory, they need our prayers. They cannot pray for themselves. So why not celebrate the life of somebody that you loved? Pray for their entry into heaven. And I'll tell you this, and kind of a final thought here. I really believe those prayers that we're going to be offering in that novena, there are going to be a lot of purgatorial souls released into heaven. And these souls, their purgation will be mitigated, and there are going to be many souls whose purgation will be totally alleviated due to the power of the Mass, the chaplet, and the rosary, and our combined prayer. Join us every day for those prayers. Be part of that. Be part of that church militant, all right? And we'll pray for those who've gone before us, that church suffering, all right? And I'll be praying for you, too. I pray every evening with my wife, my Mass, and pray my chaplet, my rosary. I care about you. I really do. I mean that. I love you very much. I consider you my spiritual family. And I'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, pray for me, because I could use your prayers as well. I got a little special intention. I just came across my radar. I'm praying for. Until next time, remember, God loves you. Have a great day.